'cause my baby loves it when I take her and put her in the middle of some acre. Little Renny Henny Henny with some acre. A little shotgun ride in a gator. My baby loves it when I take her rolling through the pasture, ball cap backwards. Get her heels off of the concrete, get her barefoot dancing in the cold creek. Out in the country, my baby loves it when I fire up the blazer and put her in the middle of some acres.
This is Phil Mee. I hope all your trails are happy. We'll talk again next hour on WRCO in studio with The Morning Show. News this hour is sponsored by Pamela's Fine Jewelry, a full-service jewelry store in Spring Green featuring a wide variety of styles. And the Phoenix Center in Richland Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, along with video games. It's 70 degrees at 9 o'clock.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Burials taking place in Gaza and hospitals are flooded with wounded Palestinians after Israeli troops opened fire near a crowd trying to collect food at an aid distribution site. Hospital officials say 80 people died and more than 150 were injured. Here's ABC Chief Foreign Correspondent Ian Pannell.
There have been multiple killings at food sites over the last few weeks. As the crisis on the ground worsens, the UN's food program estimating 90,000 Palestinians are suffering from malnutrition, many on the brink of starvation.
A Bangladesh military plane crashed into a school today in Dhaka, the death toll rising to 18 with 164 others injured, according to a spokesman for the Bangladesh Armed Forces. The school had some 2,000 students from elementary through high school. The search for victims from the July 4th flooding in Central Texas has been going on for weeks. Now the list of people unaccounted for is down to just 8, down from 160 who had been on the list before. This is ABC News. Alaska Airlines has resumed operations following an undisclosed technical error affecting its entire system for approximately 3 hours. The carrier said to have experienced an IT outage that resulted in a temporary system-wide ground stop. Days before the start of the NFL preseason games, President Trump is stepping up efforts to have the Washington Commanders change their name back. Here's ABC Senior White House Correspondent Selena Wang.
President Trump says he won't make a deal for the football team's stadium to be built if they don't change their name back to the Washington Redskins, calling the name change ridiculous. The team dropped the name Redskins in 2020 after decades of criticism from Native American groups who called it racist and derogatory.
The president also saying on social media he wants Cleveland's baseball team to bring back its old name, also considered racist by many. The president writing, "Make Indians great again." Miga. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Good morning. This is Pamela at Pamela's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Spring Green. The summer is here, and our windows display features summer fun and great summer jewelry. Ankle bracelets, toe rings, bracelets, earrings, and so much more. Have a safe, fun summer in 2025 from Pamela's in beautiful downtown Spring Green.
Looking for the perfect Friday night fish dinner? The Phoenix Center in Richland Center has you covered. Every Friday starting at 4 p.m., they serve up delicious deep fried or baked fish, dine in or take it to go. Open Monday through Saturday starting at 11 a.m. and closed on Sundays. The Phoenix Center is still the local favorite for food, fun, and family time. From mouth-watering pizza to a night of bowling, it's the go-to destination for good times and great meals. To order, call 649-7469.
It's your WRCO Hometown Weather Watch, sponsored by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765. You don't need 20% down to get into your dream home.
A high in the low 80s today with east to southeast winds at 5 to 12 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and mild, a low of 63. Tuesday, partly sunny, warm and more humid. A slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm, a high of 84. Tuesday night, muggy, continued slight chances of thunderstorms and a low of 73. Wednesday, 94 with heat indexes which could rise to 100 or higher.
This is Mark Jelenic with the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service. Individuals often seek ways to ease the burden from their loved ones. One of the largest burdens you can take off your loved one is to make known what you wish to have done upon your death. We at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center and Muscadet are here to assist you in making your wishes known to your family in a comfortable, stress-free environment.
At Julie Karen State Farm, we believe great service goes beyond transactions. It's about making a real impact. Whether it's a helping hand, expert advice, or going the extra mile, we're here to serve you with an authentic dedication. Personalized attention, reliable support, and a commitment to a thriving community are our core values. We provide more than just coverage, we provide confidence. Having insurance is not the same as having State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home in Spring Green. Want to give your house a new look? Whether it's one room or a whole house, we can help. From the industry's best Karastan carpet to exceptional hardwood floors by Mirage, or even if it's vinyl plank, we have it. Want a new kitchen or bath? We can help with that too. Quality products and quality service from a company you can trust. Wirtz Floor and Home.
The Morning Show on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com, featuring real community conversations that matter to our community. The WRCO Morning Show studio is proudly sponsored by Richland Hospital, caring for the health of our community. Scott Industries, enjoy building strong futures. Osborne Stump Removal, clearing the way for what's next. And Sean's Auto Repair, keeping you on the road with service you can trust. Welcome to our morning show on WRCO for a Monday as we begin a new week of shows. And join us in the studio, State Senator Howard Markline representing the District 17 and Todd Novak representing the 51st Assembly District here to talk about the things going on that kind of affect our area and our state as well. Todd, I wanted to start with you. Did you have some storm damage over in your area the other day?
You know, I wasn't home. I was actually in Madison in some meetings. Fortunately, none of the tornadoes touched down any buildings. It was all fields and stuff like that. But yeah, it was pretty wild from what I understand, and talking to some farmers that they were coming down and going up. And I don't think it was the same one. I've heard two or three different ones. So I'm pretty fortunate that it didn't do any structure damage. But it's kind of, I think it may have gotten worse as it went. So I think Dodge was on the starting end of it. So
that was a scary situation for a little bit.
Not that tornadoes are cool, but some friends of mine and farmers showed me some really neat pictures of them, and it's like, not sure I would be standing out there taking pictures, but yeah, it was something else. So
yeah, did you hear anything in your area, Howard?
No. And again, I talked to, you know, one of the farmers who had a tornado go across his fields last week and on Wednesday, and you know, it's a tornado going across the field is a lot different than straight line winds. I mean, there's no corn left, you know.
Right.
I mean, it isn't like a straight line winds that'll flatten corn, but the corn surprisingly will rebound, you know, with straight line. It may have some goosenecking with that, but with a tornado, I mean, it's the corn's gone. It's like it was chopped at 3 inches in height, basically. But as Todd said, you know, we're lucky considering the number of touchdowns that we had, that really there wasn't any structural damage. You know, it was by the grace of God, you know, we didn't lose any buildings and stuff. So, you know, and I mean, obviously the corn, you know, I mean, the farmer I talked to lost about 5 acres, he figures, you know, cutting through his fields and stuff. So yeah, we were lucky.
Yeah, it could have been. If it was farm buildings, it'd be a lot worse and things
well,
like that.
Well, and so. Two, it was only half a mile from Dodgeville when they started touching down. So, I mean, if it had moved a little further south, you'd have been in the city or on the outskirts of the city, and that would have been some serious stuff, you know, because land, it was not too far from Land's End and out in that area. So it could have been pretty traumatic.
Yep, 'tis the season. Howard, we haven't talked to you since the budget passed, but it's been a little bit. I think you were here in May, but does it seem like it's been a long time? It's only been, 3 weeks since it happened?
Yeah. It was, I mean, for me, it was pretty much all-consuming, you know, for a period of time there. Lots and lots and lots of meetings and a lot of negotiations this time around. This was the most unusual budget that I've been involved with for a lot of reasons, I guess. You know, one is what was going on in Washington, D.C., and kind of the race to get we had to get our budget done and signed before President Trump signed that budget. The net effect's $1 billion a year in federal money coming into the state of Wisconsin. So we had, this has to do with the hospital assessments and stuff, but so we knew, and the governor's office knew that too. I mean, so the governor's office was also in a position where they wanted to get it done, but a lot of a lot of conversations going on, and for me as co-chair of Joint Finance Committee, it was I'd be negotiating with the Assembly co-chair, and we get a tap on the shoulder saying, "Oh, that issue is being negotiated with the governor," and so don't talk about it. Anyway. So it was unusual, just a very different budget process this time around. But all in all, I think we ended up in a good place, good budget for Wisconsin, good budget for Southwest Wisconsin, good budget for rural areas. So and obviously with the compromise budget, there's things that I wish we would have gotten, but it was a give and take. So we ended up, I think, in a good place, and the vote in both houses was bipartisan, which doesn't happen too often on a budget bill. But I was happy about that.
What did you look at as wins, Todd, from the budget?
Well, we did, we did pretty good for the ag economy, which, of course, Southwest Wisconsin is predominantly ag. Some local things. Howard and I had a few things put in the budget, and one of them we got vetoed, which was to help Iowa County with County C, which is along the river by Taliesin American Players Theater, $6.5 million to reconstruct that because it's so close to the river and the walls caving in. So we put some money in the budget. However, the governor vetoed that. I know $5 million for Taliesin matching, able to keep ARIP, which is the ag road program, and $150 million. The governor cut, I believe, $100 million out of that. And then my big thing that I was very happy about is the Office of School Safety. The Office of School Safety, which is very near and dear to me, to be able to keep that funded and to work with our rural schools, and it's a very important office. So that was overall, I would say, out of all the budgets I've done, and I have voted against Republican budgets before, this one was very interesting, as Howard said, but it's a good budget. I mean, it's something that I can talk about and say the good things in it. And so far, I haven't really had any negative feedback from the budget, and it helps. It was bipartisan. The governor's going around touting it. We're touting it. So I think that's good for Wisconsin that could get together and do this. But we passed the Senate passed the budget first, and then we did it 1:00 in the morning, and then the governor signed it at 1:30. It was just so, because we had to sign it before they did what they did in Washington. And so it was just an interesting process. That's all I'll say.
But is there a lot of caffeine on nights like that?
There is a lot of. Howard, I don't know what time you guys, the Senate got done, but they started and then we finished. But you're just, and you're on adrenaline and then you try to go back and sleep and it's just like you're staring at the ceiling. So it's pretty wild. But no, very, very transparent process. With the budget, our caucus, assembly caucus, knew what was going on and on board because, you know, there's 54 of us, and so we all had to be on the same page. And then I picked up some of our colleagues on the other side, so it worked out good. It's the first time I've ever really believed a budget's gone this well.
What were you most pleased with, Howard?
Well, the tax cuts, I guess, you know, and that was something that in past budgets we have included some tax cuts in the budget, but they were always vetoed by the governor. So, you know, we proposed tax cuts, but they didn't become reality. And this time around, and, you know, again, obviously the governor was on board with this, it's $1.5 billion of tax cuts. And the tax cuts are all oriented to, I guess, what I would consider kind of the average Wisconsinite. Income taxes, that second bracket we're raising, married filing jointly, we're raising it from, it was $19,000 to $38,000 was the second bracket. We're now raising that from $19,000 to $67,000. And that'll be, it basically cuts the that taxes in that bracket by 1 percentage point, which is, you know, which is meaningful. And so people should start seeing that once we get the Department of Revenue gets that updated. Also, we're going to be exempting retirement income for people that are age 67 or older. And one of the concerns that many people have had is that people fleeing the state, you know, when they retire, going to Florida, maybe for climate reasons, but also there's no income tax down there, you know? And so people with pensions and retirement income, you know, going to Tennessee or going to, you know, Arizona. And so now we're going to be exempting $24,000 of retirement income per person for people that are over 67. And so, and that amounts to, in round numbers, about $1,000 per year in savings for people. So, again, that's not insignificant. And then the final part of the tax cut has to do with our electricity, sales tax on electricity, okay? During the winter, there is no sales tax on electricity and natural gas, okay? But in the summertime, we tax it. The state of Wisconsin taxes that. So, and of course, you know, we all are going to be paying a lot of electric bills this week with the heat kicking in. But so we will now be exempting electricity and natural gas during the summer months as well. So, and for a lot of people, their summer utility bills are as high or higher than in the wintertime. So that's going to amount to it's going to be a 5.5% cut in your utility bill, which again, that affects everybody, renters, seniors, you know, it doesn't matter what tax bracket you're in, it's going to benefit everybody. So I, you know, all in all, I was pretty happy with that the tax cuts became part of that package. And it's going to touch everybody in some way.
What were some things you were disappointed with that didn't go through?
Well, and some of the stuff we got through, but, you know, I was disappointed in, Todd mentioned this, the veto and that County C funding. And again, County C runs right along the Wisconsin River. And the issue there is the Wisconsin River cuts into the bank there. And so for years, they've been dumping rock, gravel, just, you know, as it gets washed out, they just dump more. And they really can't expand that. That road needs to be expanded and stuff. So we found an appropriation in the forestry account that related to state parks and roads for state parks and access for state parks and stuff. And there's $172 million sitting in the forestry account. So it wasn't like we were taking tax money, income tax or state, you know, where it was a forestry account, segregated account. And you know, I met multiple times with Iowa County about this, and they need a retaining wall, okay, so it just it quits washing out. And again, it's the river. You know, it isn't like transportation is causing this. It's the river is what's causing the problem there. But anyway, and I believe that, you know, Todd mentioned the process, getting this thing through the legislature to the governor's office and signed and all that, to beat the July 4th signing in Washington, D.C. You know, it's good and bad. It's good, probably there weren't a lot of vetoes because I think they had to get it signed. They didn't probably have enough time to really spend time, you know, going through it as much as they may have in the past. But I also believe, like when it came to vetoes, I suspect the governor's office, I'm just speculating here, didn't understand the consequences of that and what, you know, what that meant for Iowa County. So I was disappointed in that. But, you know, other than that, you know, we did pretty well. You know, the Taliesin, they came to me late in the game. And with a request for, you know, fundraising, and you know, and I told them I wasn't real optimistic considering how late in the process it was, but you know, ended up got it through Joint Finance Committee, and then also the child care investment in Platteville. I think that's 140 slots, you know, for child care, which is important.
You bet, Todd. Were there some things that you weren't happy with?
I was really happy. I know that we increased special aid to schools to 42% the first year and 45% currently at about 30%, 31. And, you know, when I met with all the school superintendents around my district before the budget process, or had talked to a lot of them, that was a real big ask for them. And as with anything, you know, I think the goal was 60% the schools wanted. We got them to 45%, which in the world that we live in, Howard and I live in, is a huge, huge thing. And so I think that's that'll help our schools out here. Of course, we still haven't, you know, a lot of our problem out here is declining enrollment and things like that. But this will help offset some of their costs for special education, and they can use that wherever else they need. But then again, as I've learned through all these budgets with schools, it's never enough. So I little criticism that, well, we wanted 60, and I'm like, hey, to go from 30 to 45 is pretty good. Hopefully maybe we'll get to 60 in the next term. And, you know, sometimes some of these things take two or three budgets to get where you need to be. So, you know, I think that was a good thing to do that. And then, of course, I'm not so sure that people understand that there was the U.S. or state Supreme Court ruled that the governor, that schools can increase revenue $325 per student every year, and for 400 years, actually. And I'm not so sure people understand how that works. That gives the school board the authority to raise taxes, property taxes, which they can or can't do. So that's up to them. So I know schools are starting to work or doing their budget right now, and we'll see how that all lays out.
Yeah, that was one of the state stories we had this morning. A newly proposed bill would eliminate the per pupil adjustments for the 23-25 biennial state budget beginning in the 26-27 school year. And so did you want to comment on that, Howard?
I haven't seen the release or the, I mean, the 325 is after talking about the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 325 yeah. per student.
I mean, it's up, you know, I guess we knew that when the Supreme Court ruled that the basically the governors, they're going to be able to increase the revenue limit, which is the amount that schools can spend, by $325 per year or per pupil every year for the next 400 years. So, and the you know, it's going to be back on local control. I mean, it's going to be up to our local school boards how much they want to increase those taxes. And so, and, you know, one of the, you know, people and need to understand that the backfilling of our school finances varies by school district, varies dramatically. So I've got school districts in my Senate district that are 85% funded now by the state. Okay. So, which is, that's phenomenal. I mean, that's why when they goes out 325, it's not really costing their local property taxpayers much at all. There are a number of school districts in the state of Wisconsin that are 0% funded by the state. Okay. So it's a totally different dynamic with school districts around the state. And it's going to be up to local school boards again to decide, you know, how much they're going to be willing to raise their taxes this fall.
Okay. We'll take a break and come back with more on The Morning Show. Todd Novak and Howard Markline, our guests, on a Monday edition.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. We've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sexsonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled. Customer satisfaction is a must. And Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
Now is the time to make sure your vehicle is tuned up for summer. Hi, this is Sean from Sean's Auto Repair and Performance. We'll check your coolant, do a radiator flush, or give you that tune-up you need. Or maybe it's a new set of tires or an alignment. We can do that too. Whether it's cars, trucks, or SUVs, you'll get courteous, quality, professional service for imports and domestics. Call us now at 608-649-AUTO. That's 649-2886. Sean's Auto Repair and Performance, 184 East Mill Street, downtown Richland Center. People who care about your car.
Mental health matters for everyone, but for many people of color, the journey to mental wellness can be filled with challenges, from cultural stigma to lack of access and representation in care. This month, the Richland Hospital and Clinics is working to amplify those voices. Let's normalize conversations around mental health. Your primary care provider at the Richland Hospital and Clinics is a vital first step in strengthening mental health. Remember, mental health is an important part of your total health care.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. We are celebrating generations of progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment and innovative technology, taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There are also scheduled dairy tours, field demonstrations, hundreds of industry booths, and great family entertainment of all kinds. Mark your calendars August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
Food insecurity is a growing problem in America. Over 47 million people. More people face hunger today than during the COVID pandemic. One of every five children in America is food insecure. And hunger isn't just an urban issue. Almost 90% of the most food insecure counties are rural. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting invites you to lend a hand and help end hunger. Go to nafbhunger.com.
Welcome back to our morning show from WRCO Radio. We did get a caller that was asking about an Amish buggy, if it does not have a slow-moving vehicle sign on it or not. Todd, did you look that up, or did you?
Yeah, I just looked that up. The state passed a law years ago that they did, and Amish challenged it, and the state Supreme Court ruled that they don't have to because of religious beliefs. but it's not mandatory, but several Amish sects do it, but it's not, we can't force them to do it because of a state Supreme Court ruling that says they don't have to because of religious freedom.
Okay, so that is answered this morning. Lots of Amish in the community in your district.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have all of Lafayette and Howard and I do, and it's they're all over. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but you can't go on any road in Lafayette County, at least, and find not see an Amish farm. And I know how up north, more or part of other parts of Howard's district, he has them too. But they do use our roads. Usually, there's always a bad accident somewhere, and unfortunately, because of lawsuits and court rulings, there's really not much you can do. If the sheriff of Lafayette County told me he has a good relationship with most of the bishops, and so if there's an issue, he tries to go and talk to them and work it that way. They get along with him very well. I understand, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. You have Amish in the Hill Point area, right? You're in your district?
Yeah. Well, it used to be in my district.
Oh, yeah.
Area anymore. But as Todd said, I think the relationship between the Amish community and the local town boards and stuff varies from, I would characterize it from pretty darn good to not very good at all, you know, and that's unfortunate, of course. So, one of the things, especially down in Lafayette County, we've got a number of roads down there, Highway 126, I can think of a few others that are, you know, these rolling roads and stuff. And I just always worry about coming over the crest of a hill and having a buggy, you know, going, you know, 10 miles an hour or whatever. So we just got to be careful, you know. I mean, speed is the biggest concern. But as Todd mentioned, especially down in that area, I think, geez, we've had way too many fatalities, and which is unfortunate. Some are the blame of the Amish driver. In some cases, it was the truck or the car that was at fault. But nonetheless, it's the outcome is usually tragic. You know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, we lose lives like that.
Well, need to be careful.
Yep.
We wanted to address a little bit more about special education funding as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, you know, so the special education funding increase, one had to do with what I would call regular special education funding. And Todd talked about that, raising that up pretty significantly. The second part of that has to do with funding high-cost special education. Okay. Now, these are the students that cost more than $30,000 per year to provide special education services. Okay. And I think, and we raised that funding increase now to 90%. The state will be picking up 90% of that cost. In our rural areas, okay, we've got small districts. You know, I'm thinking of the Ithacas and Westons and, you know, some of the Wazika, for example, school districts. If you get a student, and what happens sometimes is a student will move in October, and they have the cost maybe $100,000 a year, okay? Just incredibly expensive. For a district, a small district, to absorb that kind of cost, and they can't even plan for it because this student may have moved into the district, is devastating. So at least now, for those high-cost special education students now, the state will be picking up 90% of the cost. And again, these are the students that cost more than $30,000 a year. These are typically students that need kind of around-the-clock attention. They need a personal attendant at all times, from getting on the bus to, you know, to being in class. So, and again, one student in Wazika could break the budget effectively, or make it very difficult for that small school district.
Sometimes they even need to be bused to another facility during the day as well.
Exactly. And again, you know, whether you provide the services yourself as a district, or find other areas, other districts that have the services, it still costs you the money. You know, it's just, it's a lot of money, you know, and unfortunately we have more and more of students that are in that situation today.
Mm-hmm. Anything that you wanted to add, Todd?
No, I mean, you're talking, I've talked to school districts that where these special high cost special needs could be $200,000 a year, and it's good that we help these kids, but it the cost can ruin a especially a smaller school thing. So the 90% was really a no-brainer in my mind to help them out, and it was a complaint we were hearing. So you know, the more that we can get in more specific to help schools and issues like that, I think the better it is and lightens up the load to they can send that money elsewhere. So it's like a game of shells. So
recently, Southwest Tech won an award. I believe you're an alumnus, aren't you?
From yes,
Southwest
I am. Yeah. I almost forgot because it's been so many years ago. Yeah, 1985, Phil. Yeah, they Howard can refresh me. The award we had
Aspen.
The what?
Aspen?
Yes, Aspen Award. We actually honored them both in the Assembly and Senate one of our session, a May session day. So we had them come up. So I tell you, when I drive through Finnamore and stuff and look at that campus, I can't even recognize it from when I went there. And so it's pretty impressive. We're actually we should be pretty proud of the higher education levels we have in Southwest Wisconsin, you know, Southwest Tech, and which, you know, with the trades and what they do, University of Platteville. And so we're very fortunate to have all that here.
Mm-hmm. And education, high school education is gearing a lot more toward students heading in that, to the technical education part.
Yeah, and which is great. I was at Iowa County Cattlemen's steak feed last Thursday evening, and I had a chance to talk to, obviously, a lot of farmers down there and stuff. And, you know, and they, several of them had sons and daughters that had gone or were going to Southwest Tech in ag, some ag-related field, agronomy or whatever. And so, and they were all to a person very, very happy with what the services and stuff they were provided at Southwest Tech. So, and I really I've had a great relationship with the folks down at the Southwest Tech, and they are connected to the community. You know what I mean? Sometimes I think at the university level, sometimes they're a little bit further, a bit more disconnected from, you know, the average person out here and the jobs out here and stuff. And our tech colleges really are connected. And so, but the, I asked some farmers recently, you know, what's your biggest worry? You know, you think about all the, they weren't worried about weather or tariffs or whatever. It was finding help on the farm and stuff. So anyway, so and finding people that want to work, you know. And so there are just an incredible number of jobs out there today that require people to get their hands dirty, you know, in the trades, et cetera. And, you know, you can make really good money in the trades today. You know, you're 6-digit incomes. And but you got to have a skill, obviously. You can't just sit here and, you know, without some kind of a skill. So anyway, and that's where I think the tech college is. And some of the apprenticeship programs, too, I think do a great job of preparing, you know, some of our students that, you know, maybe aren't interested in a college degree and I guess they'd rather have somebody before they spend a lot of money on a college degree that, you know, may or may not suit them well for their own personal interests. You know, I think the tech colleges do a great job. And as you mentioned, you know, there's more and more programs with our high schools, too, to get people in some of those, tech ed kinds of programs.
Harder and harder to go out and get kids to put up square bales and things like that.
Oh, yeah. And Howard's right. And I don't hear it. I hear it a lot from farmers, but I hear it from other businesses that rely on students for help or part-time. And it's just a whole different environment nowadays. Or, you know, and you know, I was just talking to a business over the weekend, and they said it's, you know, they've got some great workers, but it's a high school kid will call 2 hours before they're supposed to work and say, hey, I can't come in today. And just like, that's just the new environment we're in. And also, schools have gotten more summer activity, football. I mean, there's more, you got club sports and stuff, so it, that heats it up. But yeah, and in the efficiency of farming compared to when I farmed and even grew up on the farm and even Howard, it is totally different, but you still need the manpower. And so it is a grave concern. But I'm impressed because I think the ag programs at Southwest Tech are pretty popular and pretty full. So, and I know that every year at the Capitol we have a apprenticeship day where high school kids come in and that are in apprenticeship programs and tell us about what they're doing and where they're going. And there's, I would say, half or more are into ag mechanics, ag, you know, nutrition or stuff like that, or construction trades. And that's where we need people right now. We don't necessarily need, we do need college graduates, 4-year degrees for our nurses and stuff like that. But we need people in the trades is probably more than anything right now.
You mentioned the UW system as well. Money from the budget going to UW system, I think not as much as they wanted, right?
But no. I mean, as Todd alluded to earlier, yeah. You know, but, you know, they ended up, like, I represent UW-Platteville, and I can tell you, UW-Platteville was delighted with the outcome, you know. And so, you know, with the, at UW-Platteville, so in our negotiations with the governor's office, you know, one of the things that I really advocated for was our comprehensive campuses, the Platteville's and La Crosse's and Stevens Point and Whitewater's and Oshkosh. Those are the campuses that have experienced declining enrollment. UW-Madison is a different campus. It's just different from the other comprehensives. UW-Madison's enrollment is increasing. You know, privately, they'll tell you we're doing fine. They don't want to broadcast that too much, of course. But, you know, and so in the budget process, one thing that we really wanted to do was if we put additional money into the formula, we wanted some of that money, more than half of that money, to go to campuses, and we defined it as campuses that had experienced a declining enrollment in the last 10 years, which are the Platteville's and the Stevens Points and Whitewater's. And so we intentionally, you know, directed more of that money to campuses like UW-Platteville. And the second thing that I heard, and I talked to the Platteville chancellor often, but the second area that a campus like Platteville wanted as far as funding for was the high demand occupations, okay? Engineering, for example. Platteville's got a great engineering program. You don't hire engineers for $1.98 an hour. I mean, you know, there's a premium. And so we allocated millions of dollars to market-based compensation, of which, you know, campuses like Platteville with engineering are going to benefit. Nursing educators, hiring CPAs at UW-Whitewater. I mean, again, you don't hire those. You have to pay a premium for them. So we're able to accomplish that. So I felt really good about that. And then the other thing that I was happy with, and that Platteville is very happy with, the governor, there were two building projects on the Platteville campus that the governor did not include in his budget, and he just didn't include it in his budget. So we were able to get that, those two projects through the Joint Finance Committee, and ultimately was funded, will be funded. So I know, like I said, the UW-Platteville, they're very, very happy with the outcome of the budget. So, you know, and you know, I'm a UW system grad. I went to UW-Whitewater. My kids have gone to Oshkosh and UW-Madison and Whitewater. And, you know, I've got a very fond spot in my heart for all of our campuses and stuff. And, but, you know, I think, I, you know, again, because of my representation of UW Platteville, I probably, you know, think about them probably often, very often, you know, when it comes to funding.
Talk of tariffs, has that died down any, Todd?
I actually don't hear that much about it around the district. And, you know, now with the budget passed, that's all pretty much Howard and I are doing around the district. And people have not really talked to me about the tariffs. So I don't know, maybe they have you, but it comes up once in a while, but people just don't bring it up much. You know, the ag economy seems to be plugging away pretty good right now. I know maybe there's a little concern there, maybe, but not too bad. I'm not hearing from farmers that are like really. I wish I was a cattle farmer right now. I can tell you that. But I'm not hearing from farmers this big. Where this is going to be bad. So I'm not sure. I don't really hear about it much.
Howard.
Yeah, and, you know, on the ag front, you know, like people ask about agriculture. Well, that all depends on what kind of a farm you have, you know. Dairy farmers, the farmers I talked to, and I've talked to a bunch here in the last, you know, month or so, you know, and they'll, you know, and no farmer wants to say we're doing okay, but they're doing okay. You know, they're selling calves now for $1,000 a calf, you know. I mean, that is helping a lot. The milk price, you know, it isn't bad, but boy, you start talking about $1,000 a calf, you know, that's pretty good supplemental income, you know, for a dairy farmer. So cash crop, you know, the corn and beans, you know, nobody likes the price right now on the markets, corn and beans. But you know, what's worse than having low prices for corn and beans is not having a crop. And so, I mean, from the road now, boy, those crops look good. So, you know, I mean, we could have a very good fall as far as our yields and stuff. So, you know, and that tends to offset somewhat some of the unit pricing. So, but like Todd said, and, you know, like even within the beef market, it kind of depends on whether you got a cow-calf operation or you're buying feeders. You know, if you're buying feeders to finish, you know, you're paying a lot, you know. So, but I don't know. Farmers are eternal optimists, you know. And like I said, I think with the rain that we have had over the last, you know, couple, 3 months, you know, other than down by the state line. I mean, down by the state line, it was dry. And of course, in this area, we've had plenty of rain, adequate rains. And, you know, from the roads again, the crops look good. And I don't know, I think I see the wheat fields are starting to get combined now. And I haven't heard too much how the yields are with the wheat. But, you know, it's a legalized gambling. So, and you know, the farmers today too, gosh, they're smart. They are really sophisticated in terms of hedging their risks and that sort of thing. My dad probably could never compete, you know, today, you know, with the technology that's out there. And, you know, it's just it's a lot different.
Whole different ball game.
It is,
yeah. Most definitely. Another thing that was in the news: WISCOM. Can you comment on that, Howard?
Sure. So we put in a significant amount of money into WISCOM, which is the statewide communications network. And I don't know if you remember back when, I think it was the Kenosha situation four or five years ago, riots down there where they couldn't communicate. The state law enforcement couldn't communicate with county, couldn't communicate with locals and fire departments and rescue vehicles and all that. So WISCOM, and we actually started this in the last budget, made a significant investment and then fully funded the balance of this in the budget that we just passed. So the idea is to have a statewide platform, uniform platform that all agencies are on, so that we don't have any situations where people, you know, departments can't, or different departments, you know, can't communicate with each other. So it was brought to my attention that the situation that happened up in Minnesota with the legislators getting shot, you know, and the manhunt there and all that stuff, that, you know, that's kind of a situation where you want your law enforcement to be communicating seamlessly with each other. So, and then the other part of the package that we passed was $10 million to begin replacing the radios, because our local units are going to have to make sure that they have the radio equipment that in their either portables or in their vehicles that can connect with the new software. So this thing is going to be, it's going to be rolling out here over the next several years. It's a big project.
I would assume, I guess I would have thought that everybody communicated well between the departments, but I guess not.
I think it depends. It depends, you know, and I think it depends. I think my guess is locally here is probably not an issue. Now, communicating with the state patrol, communicating with the DNR, communicate, you know, on different agencies, Department of Justice, you know, and I mean, there's a lot of layers of law enforcement potentially in a situation, and they want to be able to, you know, communicate in the same platform.
Mm-hmm. Todd, in your area, certainly EMS, that's been an issue. Things are going well, it sounds like, or, you know, improving?
Yeah, I think they're improving, and we did some more for EMS in this budget, and I know there's been some legislation and stuff passed, and that's always going to be an ongoing thing, that every legislative session we're going to have to address EMS concerns and try to keep our local communities it's hard. I mean, it's just going to be getting harder and harder to get volunteers because of the time constraints and the help. And, you know, I've got some areas that are going to transitioning to full-time EMS and paramedics, and they're even having a hard time getting employees. So it's an issue we always get to keep having. But I think it's a little better than it was because of some stuff we did. But we still got more work to do.
And you've looked at funding for, you know, for the classes that they have to take and things like that too, haven't
right,
you?
Right. I'll defer kind of to Howard on some of this because he's done most of the legislation on this EMS, holding listening sessions with the EMTs and everything. So he's got this down pat. I'm looking at it from my local government hat, so mm-hmm. the 30,000 foot view. So, yeah, we keep doing more, and I think there's still some more bills coming up. They're probably yours, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Howard? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So in the budget, you know, we set aside money for the funding of tuition. And, you know, we're trying to do, and again, this is all based on feedback I've heard in my rural areas, that one of the barriers for getting new recruits into our EMS units is the training costs, going to classes and all that. Our people, they're volunteers. They work a full-time job. They get home. They got to go to a class, maybe have to travel an hour or better to attend a class, and they got to pay for it and stuff. So we wanted to remove at least the cost part of that. So we appropriated money in the budget for tuition, $3.5 million per year for tuition reimbursement. And then also on the tech colleges, our tech colleges are the primary provider of training of EMS for our EMS units. And they have more than a few times have had situations where they'll have like only 6 people enroll in a class. And let's say the class full is 12 or 10 or 12, okay? So they cancel the class, all right? So those 6 people that had made the decision in their local community to join their local EMS unit, EMTs, they can't do anything, you know. So we are providing money for the tech colleges, telling them basically, hey, listen, you run the class anyway because I want to get 6. You may not have a full class, but if there are 6 people sitting there, we want those 6 people to get through and start serving our community. So we provided money for that. And And then also I've got Tony Kurtz and I are working on some bills that will be rolling out here relatively soon regarding some levy limit exemptions for regional EMS units, and which is, you know, important. We have countywide levy limit exemptions, but we don't have, not every community is in the middle of the county. You know, we have, you think about Muscadet and like, a lot all over, you know, where they overlap the Lone Rock or, you know, down, you know, the Livingston. And yeah, we have a lot of communities like that. They overlap more than one county and stuff. So this would provide them with the opportunity to look at providing services regionally and providing some flexibility in terms of the levy limits.
Todd, anything that we didn't ask you about you wanted to hit on today during your visit?
No, we're in the middle of fair season and everything else, Howard and I, and so it's I'm actually having fun right now because I've got my days full of around the district, and that beats we were at Madison at the Capitol so much during this budget process in this year, and so, you know, we are into that festival part of the season and fairs. We were at the Lafayette County Fair couple weeks ago, but unfortunately they got flooded out. We were at the livestock auction, Howard and I, and then right after the livestock auction they cleared it out because the fairgrounds down there is by the river, and there was so much rain that came down, so it got flooded out. But I still got stuck with my $500 chicken that I bought, a Grand Champion broiler, just so you know.
Wow, that's got to be good eating, I hope.
Right. Yeah, and I was telling Howard, I said, I think I'm going to get a sheep because then I can sell it back on the open market. And everything was going so high, so I figured, what the heck, I'm going to get this chicken and get this over with. But it's for a good cause, and the kids light up, and Howard got a hog, and so it's fun. I enjoy it.
Howard, want to ask you, what about running again? Have you made that decision yet?
No.
You've not?
No.
Okay. When do you think that might happen?
In the future.
Okay. I wanted a morning show exclusive here, you know.
Yeah, okay. How are we doing, Phil?
We're not getting there, are we? Well, I've heard about a couple of challengers for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. All right.
And it's too early to, you know, think about that.
Okay. So. All right. Well, good. We appreciate your visit to the morning show.
Good to see you.
You bet. Good to see you. Yep. Tony Kurtz is on vacation this month, I guess. So.
Apparently.
We're not supposed to say that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
Much deserved.
He's spending quality time with his wife.
All right. Well, that's so. Good. Good for him. We all need to do that. I just got done doing that, too. Representative Todd Novak of the 51st Assembly District, Senator Howard Markline at District 17, and we'll be back with more in the morning show again. Good to be back with you. Thanks to Joanne Krulatz for filling in with us while we were gone last week, and we'll have more coming up tomorrow right here on the program.
Join the legacy at Scott's Industries, a proud family-owned business for 75 years. They're expanding and looking for dedicated team members. Enjoy competitive wages, benefits, and a $3 per hour night shift bonus. No experience necessary. Just bring your enthusiasm. Apply in person Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 810 East Nebraska Street in Muscadet. Or give them a call, 739-3171, to learn more. Scott's Industries, where opportunity meets tradition.
We've all had that gut-wrenching feeling. You purchase something, then the price drops. That's why at WCCU Credit Union, we offer you a second chance to refinance. Rates on consumer loans have been dropping. If you bought a car, truck, boat, UTV, or camper within the last few years, bring it over to WCCU and let us refinance it. WCCU is offering gas cards up to $300 when you bring your loan to us. For more details, visit us today at wccu.coop or contact any of our WCCU offices. Gas card promotion does not apply to existing WCCU loans and is good through July 31st, 2025. WCCU is federally insured by NCUA.
Helping you build a better life. WCCU Credit Union. Feel so right.
Working outdoors often results in a great feeling afterwards, the feeling of having achieved something. Whether it's tackling fallen limbs, cutting firewood, or clearing land, Steel has a chainsaw for your next project. Find your Steel at Hillsboro Equipment, like the reliable MS-271 Farm Boss, a high-performance, high-tech chainsaw that's built to work day in and day out. Enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done with a Steel chainsaw from Hillsboro Equipment, Boston Equipment, or Slama's Lawn and Sport, Reesburg.
I'm here at the theater to interview cast members from the Community Players' summer show, Little Shop of Horrors. But there's no one here, except a huge green plant. Excuse me, are you in the cast of Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah, I'm in the cast, but you could also say the cast is in me.
I see. You mean that you're all so close.
Oh, couldn't get any closer.
Are you looking forward to having an audience?
Well, that's exactly what I'm hoping for. I want lots of people to come see it. So many, it's hard to get away.
I see. Well, folks, if you're brave enough, come see the Little Shop of Horrors.
The Community Players invites you to come see the summer musical, Little Shop of Horrors. It's a story about a bloodthirsty household plant from outer space who brings fame and fortune to a shy florist and a whole bunch of trouble. The comedic cult classic will feature a huge, man-eating plant that will make Glenn Dunn disappear right before your eyes. Performances are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 25th, 26th, and 27th, and August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Richland Center High School Auditorium at 7 o'clock on the Friday shows and Saturday shows, and 2 p.m. on the Sunday shows. $15 for a